Today, we'd like to see the title of Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, and Deborah Barak in Judges chapter 3 and 4. To the souls on this online read through podcast or YouTube channel on the earth, we'd like to suggest the three expositional questions. Number one, in chapter 3, verses 7 and 8. So the children of Israel did the evil in the sight of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God and served the Baals and Asherahs. Therefore, the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them in the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. And the children of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years. What do these mean? And how can we apply these our libraries? Question 2, in chapter 3, verse 11. So the land had rest for 40 years. Then Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. What does it mean in the context, and what can we learn from here? Last question, chapter 4, verse 9. So she said, I would surely go with you. Nevertheless, there will be no glory for you in the journey you are taking, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of Yemen. Then Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. What does it mean, and what can we learn from here? You may see this map, the 12 judges in the book of Judges with the tribe parcels, you know, right there. Today we cover number 1, Othniel, victory of the Canaanites. Number 2, Ehud, he killed Elgon, victory over Moabites. And Shamgar, he killed 600, you know, Philistines. Then for Deborah Barak, victory over Sisera, you know, and the Canaanites. After Joshua deaths in 1375 before Christ, God waged up judges for Israel, spiritual revival, in time of spiritual decline and servitude under their enemies. During over 300 years in Theocrates, the 12 judges in the book of Judges, if you consider Barak as the devil's assistant, and in the first Samuel chapter 1, 12, 28, two other judges, Eli and Samuel, were raised up to lead the entire nation by God before monarchy of Saul in 1050 before Christ. In the last time, Judges 2, 1923, it came to pass, when the judges was there, that they reverted and behaved more corruptly than their fathers by following other gods, to serve them and bow down to them. They did not cease from their own doings nor from their stubborn way. Then the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he said, because this nation has transgressed my covenant which I commanded their fathers and has not heeded my voice, I also will no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua left when he died, so that through them I may test Israel, whether they will keep the ways of the Lord to walk in them as their fathers kept them or not. Therefore the Lord left those nations without driving them out immediately, nor did he deliver them into the hand of Joshua. It shows Israelite yo-yo phenomena, spiritual decline and spiritual revival through Judges. It happened 14 times, including Eli and Samuel before monarchy. Today we cover four judges: Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Barak. First one, now these are the nations which the Lord left at he might test Israel by them. That is all who had not known any of the wars in Canaan. God allowed the enemies who had not been completed driven out by Joshua and Israel to remain to test the Israelites' faith and obedience. A new generation, unfamiliar with the great battles of conquest, was now coming of age. This was only so that the generations of the children of Israel might taught to know word, at least those who had not formally known it, namely five lords of the Philistines, all the Canaanites, the Sidonians, and the Hivites, who dwelt in Mount Lebanon, from Mount Baal Hermon to the entrance of Hamath. And they were left that he might test Israel by them to know whether they would obey the commandments of the Lord, which he had commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. Verse 5, thus the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites, the Hittites and the Amorites, the Perizzites and Hivites and Jebusites. Instead of obeying God's command, the Israelites let their enemies stay and live among them. This was a tragic mistake. And they took their daughters to be their wives and gave their daughters to their sons, and they served their gods. Verse 7, so the children of Israel did the evil in the sight of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God and served the Baals and Asherahs. Baal, the god of agriculture, harvest, and fertility, along with his female counterpart, Asherah, goddess of fertility, represented by wooden pillars, were central to ancient pagan worship. This worship often involved licentious sexual rites in honor of fertility deities like Asherah. God explicitly warned against and prohibited such practices. God's warnings and laws are for our benefit. He knows the ultimate consequences of our actions, and in his love seeks to protect us from suffering them. However, we often tragically assume these warnings don't apply to us, believing we know better or that our situation is unique. This is a mistake. The Israelites disregarded God's warnings and disobeyed his commands, leading to years of tragedy, sorrow, suffering, and bondage. Verse 8, question 1. Therefore the anger of the Lord was not against Israel, hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan, Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. And the children of Israel served Cushan, Rishathaim 8 years. Before entering the land, God warned the Israelites in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 1, about the severe consequences of disobeying his commands. Yet once they were there, they completely disregarded his warnings and did exactly what he told them not to do. Many find the Old Testament's severe judgment against nations difficult to comprehend often. People dismiss God's warnings as unnecessary. However, God commanded the extermination of those in the land because he intended for Israel to be his instrument of judgment against these pagan nations, their horrific and vile practices. Verse 9, when the children of Israel called out to the Lord raised up a deliverer for the children of Israel who delivered them. Otniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. Otniel, Israel's first judge, volunteered to lead an attack against a fortified city, thereby guiding the nation back to God. He was the nephew of Caleb, an example renowned for his unwavering faith in God. Otniel successfully led the people back to God and freed them from the oppression of the Mesopotamian king, cross reference right there. Verse 10, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him, and he judged Israel. He went out to war, and the Lord delivered Cushan, Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, into his hand, and his hand prevailed over Cushan, Rishathaim. The first oppressive king Israel faced originated from Mesopotamia, especially the region of Assyria, located far to the north, and the second oppressive king from a neighboring territory, the land of Moab. This land bordered Israel directly and was inhabited by Moabites, who, according to biblical accounts, were descendants of the Lord through the incestuous relationship with his daughter. Notably, the tribe of Reuben allocated land was situated directly across from Moab, the east of the Dead Sea. Question 2, verse 11. So the land had a rest for 40 years. Then Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. The account of Othniel marks not at the first isolated incident, but the beginning of a recurring pattern for Israel. This cycle involved the Israelite turning away from God, subsequently reaping the consequences by being delivered into the hands of their enemies and enduring oppression and hardship. In their distress, they would then call upon the Lord, who would raise up a deliverer to set them free from their enemies. This would lead to a period of peace, prosperity, only for them to fall back into the same pattern of worshiping other gods and turning their heart away from the Lord. This cycle of apostasy, servitude, and deliverance will be repeated. So often it becomes tiresome. This pattern mirrors represent the first instance of apostasy, the first period of servitude, and the first judgment in this repeating cycle. 12 and 13. And the children of Israel again did the evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord strengthened the Egypt king of Moab against Israel, Eglon king of Moab against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. Then he gathered to himself the people of Ammon, Amalek, went and defeated Israel, and took possession of the city of Palms. The Moabites, Ammonites, and Amalekites invaded across the Jordan. The Ammonites, like the Moabites, were descendants of Lot through his other daughter. The Amalekites were his perennial foe of Israel, an Aramaic Bedouin type group. Amalek symbolically represents a flesh led during Saul's reign when Israel was a strong. Saul failed to completely destroy Amalek as God through Samuel had commanded. This disobedience nearly cost Israel its very existence when at the time of Esther, Haman the Agite, also an Amalekite, plotted to destroy the nation. This illustrates a crucial point. God doesn't want us to make any provision for our flesh. If you attempt to compromise with your flesh, it will ultimately rise up and destroy you. This is why God commanded their extermination. The cross-reference here. Verse 15, but when the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, verse 14, so the children of Israel served Eglon and Moab 18 years. But when the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, raised up a deliverer for them, Ehud the son of Gera, the Benjamite, a left-hand man, by him the children of Israel sent tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. Ehud was a deliverer for Israel. In a broader sense, all the judges in the Bible are likely all examples foreshadowing of Jesus Christ, the ultimate deliverer. He will save Israel from their human enemies. But Jesus saved us from Satan behind sin, who is our greatest enemy. Now Satan has been defeated by Jesus' resurrection, but not destroyed yet. 16. Now Ehud made himself a dagger. It was a double-edged and a cubit in length, and fastened it under his clothes on his right thigh. So he brought a tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. Now Eglon was a very fat man, and when he had finished presenting the tribute, he sent away the people who had carried the tribute, but himself turned back from the stone image that were at Gilgal and said, "I have a secret message for you, O king." He said, "Keep silence." And all who attended him went out from him. So Ehud came to him. Now he was sitting upstairs in the cool private chamber. Then Ehud said, "I have a message from God for you." So he rose from his seat. Then Ehud reached with his left hand, took the dagger from his right thigh, and thrust it into his belly. In Ehud's era, being left-handed was often viewed as a handicap, a trait common among many Benjamins. However, God strategically used Ehud's perceived weakness to secure victory for Israel. This story underscores a timeless principle. God can use you just as you are to accomplish His divine work. Even the hilt went in after the blade and the fat closed over the blade, for he did not draw the dagger out of his belly, and his entrails came out. Then Ehud went out through the porch and shut the doors of the upper room behind him, locked them. When he had gone out, Eglon's servant came to look, and to their surprise, the doors of the upper room were locked. So they said, "He is probably attending to his needs in the cool chamber." So they waited till they were embarrassed, and still he had not opened the doors of the upper room. Therefore, they took the key and opened them, and there was their master, fallen dead on the floor. But Ehud had escaped it while they delayed and passed behind the stone images and escaped it to Seirah. And it happened when he arrived, then he blew the trumpet in the mountain of Ephraim, and the children of Israel went down with him from mountains, and he led them. Then he said to them, "Follow me, for the Lord has delivered your enemies, the Moabites, into your hand." So they went down after him, seized the fords of Jordan leading to Moab, and did not allow anyone to cross over. And at that time, they killed about 10,000 men of Moab, all the stout men of a valley, not a man escaped. So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest for 80 years. Ehud's courageous faith secured 80 years of peace for the nation of Israel, demonstrating that genuine faith strengthens when facing opposition. Following this, near Jericho, at the shallow forest where the Israelites had originally crossed the Jordan into the land, they intercepted and eliminated the enemy. 31. After him was Shamgar, the son of Anath, who killed 600 men of Philistines with an ox goat, and he also delivered Israel. We know very little about Shamgar, the third judge, as only one verse mentions him here. Chapter 4, when Ehud was dead, the children of Israel again did the evil in the sight of the Lord. This was the time Israel turned away from God. Our sins hurt us and others, but ultimately all sin is against God because it ignores His commands and authority, as David prayed. And chapter 51, verse 4, So the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who dwelt in Harosheth Hagoyim. Even though Hazor's city was captured during Joshua's time, the Israelites did not completely destroy it out, allowing some of its people to remain. Hazor was a very powerful city historically later. These Canaanites regrouped, trying to regain their lost power. If the Israelites had simply obeyed God from the beginning and driven the Canaanites out of the land, this whole situation wouldn't have happened. Verse 3, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, for Jabin had 900 chariots of iron, and for 20 years he had harshly oppressed the children of Israel. In the ancient warfare, chariots of iron were the equivalent of a modern-day tank, representing a formidable military advantage due to their advanced technology and destructive capability. Despite enduring 20 years of unbearable circumstances, the Israelites only then cry out to the Lord for help. This highlights a critical lesson. God should be our primary recourse when facing struggles or dilemmas. The Israelites' choice to pursue their own path led them into difficult situations. God desires us to seek Him first, trusting in His strength and guidance from the outset. Verse 4, now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lebitoth, was juggling and judging Israel at that time. Bible indeed records several women who served as prophetesses. This demonstrates God's sovereign choice in selecting individuals for leadership roles like a judge, regardless of their age or gender. And she would sit under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the mountain of Ephraim. And the children of Israel came up to her for judgment. 6-8. Then she sent and called for Barak, the son of Amlak from Kadesh in Naphtali, and said to him, has not the Lord God of Israel commanded to go and deploy troops and mount Tabor, take with you 10,000 men of the sons of Naphtali and of the sons of Zebulun? Barak's request reveals up to 8, and against you I will deploy Sisera and commander of Jabin's army with his chariot and his multitude at the river Kishon, and I will deliver him into your hand. But Barak said to her, if you will go with me, then I will go, but if you will not go with me, I will not go. Barak's request reveals the fundamental lines on the human strength of God's promise. However, by faith on God's commandment, an individual ventures out, even if he must go alone. Verse 9, so she said, I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, there will be no glory for you in the journey you are taking, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman. Then Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. Her character not only drew people together, but also commanded the respect of even a military general like Barak. As a prophetess, her primary role was to deliver God's word for the obedience to God. This highlights that true leaders must prioritize spiritual well-being of those they lead, focusing on the people themselves, not solely on success. And Barak called Zebulun Naphtali to Kadesh. He went up with 10,000 men under his command, and Deborah went up with him, 11. Now Heber the Canaanite of the children of Horeb, the father-in-law Moses, and separated himself from the Canaanites and pitched his tent near Terebinth tree and Janam, which is beside Kadesh. Heber was a Jael's husband and a descendant of Moses' father-in-law. This Nomanic Bedouin people came into the land with the Israelites. 12, and reported Sisera that Barak, the son of Abinoam, had gone up to Mount Tabor. The river Kishon really is much of a river. It's just what we would call a stream. So Sisera gathered together all his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, and all the people who were with him from Hezron, Hegron to deliver Kishon. Then Deborah said to Barak, "For this is the day in which the Lord has delivered Sisera into your hand. Has not the Lord gone out before you?" So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariot and all his army with the edge of the sword before Barak. And Sisera alighted from his chariot and fled away on foot. But Barak pursued the chariots and the army as far as Harashetzer Haguim. And all the army Sisera fell by the edge of the sword. Not a man was left. However, Sisera had fled away on the foot to the tent of Jael, the wife of Heber, the Kenite. For there was a peace between Jabin king Hazor and the house of Heber Canaanite. And Jael went out to meet Sisera and said to him, "Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me, do not fear." And when he had turned aside with her into the tent, she covered him with a blanket. Then he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty." So she said, opened a jug of milk, gave him a drink, and covered him. And he said to her, "Stand at the door of the tent. If any man comes and inquires of you and says, 'Is there any man here?' you shall say, 'No.'" Then Jael, her wife, took a tent peg and took a hammer in her hand and went to support it to him, drove the peg into his temple, and it went down into the ground, for he was fast asleep weary, so he died. And then as Barak pursued Sisera, Jael came out to him and said to him, "Come, I will show you the man whom you seek." And when he went into her tent, there lay Sisera dead with the peg in his temple. So on that day, God subdued Jabin, king of Kenya, presence of children. Up to right here, the Song of Deborah recounts how God intervened the battle, sending torrential downpour, causing a flood. This turned the battleground into a quagmire, bogging down Sisera's chariots and rendering them immobile, trapped into mire. They become easy targets for Barak's infantry, who descended from Mount Tabor, attacked them by the Kishon stream, and utterly destroyed them. Sisera, realizing his defeat, abandoned his chariot and fled on foot. Regarding Jael's actions, some question her deceit. However, upon hearing Sisera's request to conceal him if pursued, she likely deducted that he had been defeated. At this point, Jael strategically aligned herself with the winning side rather than remain loyal to the vanquished Sisera in verse 17. Therefore, her actions should be viewed within this context of shifting loyalty in a time of war. The last verse 24, "And the hand of the children of Israel grew stronger and stronger against Jabin, king of Canaan, until they had destroyed Jabin, king of Canaan." Israelites were able to destroy Jabin, king of Canaan, by God after the death of Sisera, the commander of his army. We covered all the questions you made from prayer or missionary. Last we received a prayer for the underground church and ministers in Iran's God's power, grace and protection in the last days. Okay, let's sing all together Maranatha song on brochure.